for our business meeting, and this is item 2, judicial workload assessment. This is an action required item. And we have DAG and also Leah Rose Goodwin. You may proceed.
Well, good afternoon, Madam Chief Justice, Judge Jarre, and members of the Judicial Council. My name is Leah Rose Goodwin from the Office of Court Research, and I'm here with DAG McLeod, the manager of the Office of Court Research. This report to the legislature and governor is a mandated study that's responsive to two provisions of the government code. The first requires the Judicial Council to report to the legislature and governor on or before November 1st of every even-numbered year on the need for new judgeships in each superior court. And beginning with this year's report, the Judicial Council is also required to report on a provision that allows for the conversion of additional subordinate judicial officer positions to judgeships if the conversion results in a judge being assigned to a family or juvenile law calendar previously held by a subordinate judicial officer. Now, the following slides are going to delve into the judicial needs assessment in some detail, but before doing so, I want to underscore the main finding of the assessment, which is that there are currently not enough judges for the volume of workload of the courts.
Could you repeat that?
Louder and louder.
There are currently not enough judges for the volume of workload of the courts.
Yeah, we knew that.
Thank you, Judge Rosenberg. I've listed here on this slide previous council action regarding judicial needs, and I'd like to remind the council that this report, the Judicial Needs Assessment Update, concerns the workload and need for judicial officers. We also update and maintain a staff workload model, or RAS model, but today's presentation focuses on judicial needs. To recap, the 2001 and 2004 council actions were to approve the methodology that is used to assess judicial workload, and the method has two main inputs or drivers. One is a three-year average of the most recent filings data, and the second are case weights, and case weights are estimates of the amount of time in minutes that judicial officers need to hear cases from filing through disposition and including any post-disposition activity. And we do those calculations for 18 different case types. The Council approved updates to the judicial workload assessment in 2007, 2008, and 2010, and each time the assessment is updated, the most recent three-year set of filings data is used. And that's the only input that changed in those three reports. The same set of case weights that were approved in 2001, have been used to estimate judicial workload up through the 2010 assessment. Now, in 2010, a new time study was conducted to assess judicial workload, and a new set of case weights was approved by the Judicial Council in December 2011. The update that we're presenting today, the 2012 Judicial Needs Assessment, is the first report that uses the new case weights to assess judge need. At the December 2011 Council meeting, we discussed the study in greater detail and the resulting case weights. I know that several members were not at that meeting, so I've summarized here some of the reasons why we think it's important to update the case weights. Some examples might include changes in requirements that result from the 2006 Omnibus Conservatorship and Guardianship Act. There's greater use of e-filing and other electronic technologies that didn't exist or weren't widespread the last time the judicial workload study was conducted. And finally, we have better and more complete data reported by the courts. Also, as I mentioned, we evaluate judicial workload using 18 different filings categories, and we distinguish between those because the working groups that have guided our studies have pointed out that there are meaningful differences between the judge work required for those case types. I want to point out that one additional case type we added in this study was a case weight for asbestos cases in recognition of their complexity and the use of judicial resource that varies from the workload required for other unlimited civil cases. This slide shows the 2010 judicial need, and we showed this slide at the 2011 council meeting. I have it here to illustrate that at the statewide level, the new case weights did not change judicial need by very much. The first column of this table shows the number of authorized judicial positions. Now, this includes 50 judgeships that were authorized by AB 159 but have not been funded. The next column shows the assessed judicial need. The first number is the assessed judicial need calculated with the old case weights. That's 2,352. The number right below that shows the need using the new case weights, 2,367. In both calculations, we've used the same set of filings data, or put another way, we've held filings constant so we can show how the change in the case weights affects judicial need. And as you can see, the new case weights had a very negligible effect on judicial need. It increased it by 15 positions, or 0.07%. Now, this 2010 assessment was calculated using the most current filings data at the time. Those were filings from fiscal year 06-07 through 08-09. Now, on this next table, I show the 2012 update, and what you see here is that overall assessed need has decreased slightly since the last assessment. The 2012, or based on the latest set of filings data, which spans the period fiscal year 08-09 through 10-11, judicial need is 2,286 judicial officers. That's 66 fewer positions than the last time the assessment was run in 2010. But nevertheless, let me say again that the judicial branch needs more judgeships than currently authorized. And statewide, the percentage need is 13% more. However, the need in each court varies. In fact, there are 15 courts that show a need of 25% or more judicial officers than the number of authorized positions. These changes in judicial need between the two assessments are driven largely by changes in filings over the past few years. As many of you know, the number of total filings, so for all case types, peaked in fiscal year 08-09 and have declined slightly over the last 2 years. However, the largest share of those total filings is made up of infractions cases, which require very little judicial workload. In fact, felony cases represents the largest share of judicial workload. And what we see in felony is that the peak occurred much earlier in fiscal year 06-07. That's the red dot on this graph. So what I have across the x-axis are the fiscal years, and on the y-axis or the vertical axis are the number of felony filings. So the peak occurred in fiscal year 06-07. For the last 4 years or so, the number of felony filings have dropped. The 2010 judicial workload assessment was based on these 3 years of filings data, and the low point here, fiscal year 08-09, is the high point of the next 3 years of filings data, the 3 years that were used for the 2012 judicial needs assessment. And the reason I point this out is that the decline in filings, felony filings alone, has resulted in a decrease in judicial need of 55 positions. Earlier, I pointed out that the 2012 assessment shows a need for 66 fewer judicial positions than the 2010 study. This shows that the majority of that drop in need can be attributed to lower felony filings. The Statistics and Information Unit compiles the data that goes into the court statistics report, and it's used for our workload models. And they have created a number of reports and data management tools to help courts understand local and statewide data trends that, and also reports that courts can use for management purposes. These are all part of a data quality control program that we use to validate the data for the workload models, and I would invite courts to view these tools on the court research page of Soranis. And now I'm going to turn it over to Dag to talk about the status of the conversion of the additional SJO positions.
Thank you, Leah. The SJO conversion piece of this recommendation, it's one of the less well-known pieces of the judicial needs study. We used the judicial workload model to assess the need for subordinate judicial officers as distinct from the need for judges in our model. We did this back in 2007, and as a result of that work that we did, the legislature enacted Government Code 69615, which allowed for the conversion of 162 subordinate judicial officer positions in 25 courts that we had identified as having subordinate judicial officers in excess of the workload that was appropriate to SJOs. I'm going to go a little bit back into the policy rationale for this. It has a long history, but I can summarize it very briefly. I'm going to start with 1999, when the National Center for State Courts conducted a study that found that in many courts, subordinate judicial officers were really judges in all but name. They rarely performed what could be considered subordinate judicial duties. The report found that it was the dearth of the creation of new judgeships during the 1990s that led many courts to create subordinate judicial officer positions to manage their caseload. And as a result, we found ourselves in many courts with an imbalance between the number of SJOs in the court and the number of judges. Following on the 1999 report from the National Center for State Courts, a 2002 working group reported to the Judicial Council, and the Judicial Council received a report from that working group that clarified titles and duties of subordinate judicial officers and specifically began to get into these issues of what is a subordinate judicial duty, what is a case type or an event within a case type that is appropriate to a subordinate judicial officer, and what is inappropriate for a subordinate judicial officer to be handling. On the basis of that report in 2002, we were then able to take the workload model and adapt it. We mapped specific case types and events within case types to subordinate judicial officer duties, and we mapped other case types to judge duties so that we could come up with an estimate of the number of SJOs that were needed in the trial courts, and then we compared the number of SJOs that the workload implied the courts needed as opposed to the number of authorized subordinate judicial officer positions that there were in the trial courts. This report in 2007 was the foundation for evaluating and coming up with 162 was the number that we had, 162 subordinate judicial officer positions in 25 courts where the workload indicated that really these should be judgeships, not subordinate judicial officer positions. In the same year, 2007, as a result of this work that we had done using the judicial workload study, the legislature enacted Government Code 69615. Government Code 69615 allowed for the conversion of these 162 subordinate judicial officer positions to judgeships, but they allowed it at a rate of 16 conversions per year on a schedule that was developed by the Judicial Council. To date, we've converted 85 positions of these 162 positions. We've finished the conversions in many courts. But in 2010, the legislature added yet another provision to Government Code 69615 and allowed for the acceleration of the conversion of these positions by 10 a year if courts were willing to, the Government Code states conversion of an additional 10 positions if the conversion will result in a judge being assigned to family or juvenile assignment previously presided over by an SJO. So, in addition to allowing for the acceleration of the conversion policy by 10 a year, it also required that we fold into this report a report on the implementation and effect of these conversions. 1 year of having 10 extra, we had 4 courts that wanted to convert under this provision of 69615. Alameda, Los Angeles, Orange, and Sacramento all converted one subordinate judicial officer position under this provision. And those positions as yet remain unfilled by the governor, so they are vacant, so we don't really have anything to say about the effect of those conversions, but they were implemented. Leah?
Okay. So today we are asking that the council approve the report for transmission to the legislature and governor. Before we conclude this item, I've asked Donna Hershkowitz if she would come up and talk a little bit about legislation and other efforts that the Office of Government Affairs have taken to secure new judgeships.
Thank you. Just very briefly, this model that is reflected in the presentation that Dag and Leah provided to you was adopted by the legislature. We used it for the first time in the judgeships from Senate Bill 56, the first set of the 50 judgeships that we were able to secure that was enacted in 2006. And this was the first time that we really were taking politics out of the equation of where the new judgeship should be allocated, and we created a formula, a need based on this formula. The legislature adopted that methodology and put that methodology into statute, which was really a wonderful recognition that the Judicial Council had developed a methodology to really assess where the judicial need is across the state so we could count on judges being assigned to and placed in those courts that really had experienced the most need over the past several years. The statutory requirement to issue this report every 2 years on the judicial needs assessment, I think, really reflects an interest on the part of the legislature in being kept apprised on the need and the workload for judges across the state. And we have proceeded with a number of pieces of legislation in the past several years to secure additional judgeships using this model, working with the legislature to show them where the need is and how many judges we need in California. There were, as I mentioned, Senate Bill 56, enacted in 2006, gave us the first set of 50 new judgeships that were identified as among the 150 most critically needed judgeships. In 2007, through Assembly Bill 159, we were able to secure the second set of new judgeships, which, as you all know, has yet to be funded, but did recognize the legislature's understanding of the importance of acknowledging the need of judges throughout the state to be able to handle the workload. In subsequent years, the council did direct the Office of Governmental Affairs to pursue legislation sponsored by the council to seek the third set of judgeships, although the second set of 50 judgeships hadn't yet been funded, again, to help cement the legislature's acknowledgement of the formulas that we had developed, as well as their understanding of the need for judgeships that would ultimately be funded once the funding was available. Those efforts to secure the third set of 50 judges have not yet been successful, but as Justice Baxter mentioned to you earlier in his description of the activities of the Policy Committee will be bringing to you at the December meeting a recommendation for Judicial Council sponsorship, once again, of efforts to secure legislatively authorization for that third set of 50 judgeships.
Thank you, and we'll take any questions.
Commissioner Alexander.
Donna, what effect do you think it'll have with some of the counties or courts laying off SJOs, which are listed or included in these numbers, and then saying we still need more judges?
You ask the difficult questions, Commissioner Alexander. I think there's certainly a broad recognition statewide in the legislature, really everywhere, that courts have been struggling to figure out how to keep their doors open, what are the smartest things that they can do to operate with the budget reductions that we've been faced with. And for some courts, that has meant that they have had to lay off the subordinate judicial officer positions. Not a lot of courts, as I understand it, but for some courts, they have had to do that. Certainly, that will be part of the discussion to the extent that any of those courts are identified as courts in the that would be eligible for a judgeship in the next set of 50. I'm not sure. I think maybe one of the courts would be eligible for a judgeship in the next set of 50. So that would absolutely have to be part of the discussion if they're sort of effectively creating more judicial need because of the laying off of a commissioner. It was a budget choice that the court felt that it needed to make in order to do the smartest thing possible in the best way possible for the most Californians, but certainly it will have to be part of the discussion with the legislature.
Judge Jacobson?
I would make a motion to forward the report to the legislature and the governor.
Thank you. Second.
Thank you. Second by Judge Rosenberg and Judge O'Malley. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you for the report.
Thank you.